Man, I'll tell you something right now. That music gets me going every time I put it on. Like every time we're about to like get our podcast going on, Energy Facts Chats, the number one podcast to help bridge energy expectations with energy realities. It does something to me. It pumps me up. And I'm kind of pumped about this one, Mike. This is for those that are tuning in after August 11th, 1:12 Central CST.
Friday. It's a Friday.
Friday. Who's listening to this on Apple, Spotify, wherever you're tuning in, or YouTube, wherever you tune in from. We are actually doing this live, and we're just kind of having a conversation, and it's being streamed to my personal LinkedIn account and my Twitter account. And what we're going to do now, after we get the 24 hours period of grace, which, Mike, I feel like this is something, I'm not going to take the blame for this, but you know what?
I should have triggered that last night. I should have set that in motion. I don't know how this works. I don't know how this technical stuff works.
I kind of feel like we shouldn't wait till we go live to figure this out together, but that's okay. Just, you know what? Just like energy policy, we got to figure this out as we move along and find out the realities of waiting and procrastinating, Mike. So, I want to thank everyone out there for kind of tuning in, wherever you're tuning in from, whether you're tuning in live at your desk, at the office before you kind of tune out for the weekend, or if you're in your car and it's a Monday and you catch your energy fact chats that way, or wherever you're getting this from, we appreciate that. Obviously, we apologize for the delayed in the periods between the last podcast we've had. Man, is that correct?
I don't even remember. You've been so busy. You've been in Oklahoma City. You've been in
California,
Denver, probably. You've been to Disneyland.
California, went to California. Yep. We can actually talk about that kind of our experience in California. But for those that kind of tune in for the first time, like this kind of came from, again, let's bring it back to the basics, Mike. I'm excited. It's Friday. Just got back from Oklahoma City. Had a great time up there. This started when I met Mike through his content on Twitter, LinkedIn, all that fun stuff. And we just kind of connected. On the line, and it was just kind of one of those things. We'd have these conversations. And I'm like, dude, this, like, I'm learning so much from you. Like, I just love this kind of like the back and forth, I guess, chemistry, banter, whatever you want to call it. And I'm like, we should probably bring this out there, because there's a lot of this energy expectations that's currently out there in the market today. Whether it's, you know, an all EV fleet by this date. Okay, well, that sounds great and all on paper. But what does that actually mean to the everyday consumer? Right. Other ideas. Hey, this, you know, if this comes in, if we just flip over to, you know, batteries or just wind or renewable
carbon sequestration,
like that's going to solve all that. However, what does that really mean? And you can go back through our previous podcasts, and we've had some very interesting discussions, very timely discussions on kind of these energy policies that are kind of being released. And it sounds good on paper, and it might sound good to, you know, these big super major corporations that can handle these, I guess, increase in cost and price and pass it to the consumer. But what does it mean kind of for the everyday family? And that's kind of what we're here to do today, is talk about
And hopefully you don't hear too much of my everyday family in the kitchen next door.
That's
how professional this is right here, this recording studio we're in.
But that only happens, though. Of course, there's going to be some disruptions when we're going live. But if anyone's out there tuning in, say hello, leave your comments, chime in. And again, once we do this live again, we're going to have this on the Energy Fact Checks YouTube channel as well. And what else, Mike? What else am I missing?
I think that was a great intro. I was going to say,
and if you have any questions, after we kind of play the outro, if you want to stick around, and whether you're in your car tuning this later and you want to listen to the questions that were asked by the audience, tune in. And if you are in the audience, stick around towards the end. So maybe we can chime in and just answer a few. So, Mike.
Yes.
How you been, man? It's been like, what, 2 or 3 weeks since our last one. And I don't like that.
It's been 2 or 3 weeks. Nothing has changed. I have not received any permits for our development, so you haven't missed anything. Shocker, right?
So now we're 6 years. Okay, so when you say that, okay, for those that are tuning in for the first time, What are you talking about? You've been waiting 6 years for permits. What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you said 6 years. I didn't say you know, the inside skinny, you know, the scoop.
Cause I'm
yeah,
a huge fan of this show.
You know, I think about that a lot. When we started as a developer on our project in Kern County on the West Side, I had no children and now I have three and one going into first grade, and we haven't received any meaningful permits to do much of anything. That being said, we have done a tremendous amount of work for some big, meaningful permits, some demonstrations that we're going to be rolling out when we do get permits. We've front-loaded a lot of engineering. So what it really means, and I think maybe where we should go with this to kind of keep it germane to whoever's listening or whoever will listen to this.
It's just you and me, bro.
Yeah, one of the big things that is really on my mind day in and day out, and I hear a lot of other people in the industry talking about the transition and the projects that are happening, the money from the IRA that is coming alongside energy transition projects or clean carbon projects, whatever phrase we want to use. In a state like California, which is a leader in climate action and climate goals and climate mandates, you mentioned, right, et cetera, how do you have a transition if you have no roadmap to permit said transition? And what I mean by that is, in a state like California, where we're being told we should not produce fossil fuels, we should not burn fossil fuels, we need to put carbon in the ground, we need to fortify the electricity grid, we need to take all these massive steps to decarbonize, but it's never been done. It's never been permitted. The only projects that have ever been permitted are flat panel photovoltaic for solar and wind projects, which is pretty much exhausted onshore in California. And now we're seeing lithium ion batteries to provide quote unquote storage, although that's really only 2 hours in duration. So in my mind, what I'm seeing is a huge missed opportunity for a state I'm in if we can't figure out how to process permits. But I'm also seeing a big opportunity for folks in Texas, in Louisiana, in states where they have open regulatory permit pathways. And evidence of that today, the Department of Energy just awarded $1.2 billion to two facilities, one in Louisiana and one in South Texas, for carbon capture.
Okay.
Or direct air capture hubs. Why are those projects getting selected? In my mind, it's because you can build carbon pipelines, or you can permit pipelines. You can permit and build carbon capture facilities, whether it's direct air capture or sequestration facilities. You can push these projects forward in a reasonable time frame. So if I'm the federal government and I'm looking at these projects and looking at my pie of money to put into projects, am I going to put money into projects that can get permitted and built? Or am I going to pump money into a bottomless pit in California where there is no framework for getting these things done? Because
let me ask you a question. I mean, it kind of seems like, and again, I'm going to start rambling right here, which is fine, but it kind of seems like this path to wherever California is going on. And again, to echo what we've always talked about, why do we care about California policy? Why do we care about policy? Because policy, like herpes, spreads. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, that'll catch people. That'll make people.
I don't know how viral it is, but yeah.
Policy spreads. Okay. Yeah. And that's kind of why it's important. So it seems like with California, there's all this, you know, talk and rhetoric and narrative to do X, Y, Z. However, it's just kind of like, for me, it's kind of like paying the front of the house and not worried about the backside of the house. You know, like you're making you're getting a lot of good curb appeal. But the reality is you're not consuming less hydrocarbons. The demand isn't shrinking for hydrocarbons or any fossil fuels or anything like that. So what's going to take, besides this like mess of this cornucopia of mess, of stickiness to get things permanent, to get things moving down the line. Because didn't you say Gavin, I'm on a first name basis with him, but didn't you say that he kind of like streamlined all these like projects for infrastructure?
Yeah, so twofold. I'll take your analogy a step further. I think what's happening in California, you were just at Disneyland. It's not painting the front of the house. It's we're setting up the Western, you know, the saloon and the Western facade of a movie set. Okay. Yeah. There is no house. It's a wooden plank of an exterior facade that Hollywood. Just will get tilted over in a windstorm or in some adverse event. And so to answer that first part, I think what has to happen is grid failure or $10 gasoline, massive movements in the price or availability of energy.
So there's going to have to be some there's going to have to be some disruption in the everyday, I guess, pocketbooks of consumers, right? Or
pocketbooks or availability. Or I'm sitting here in the dark.
But you know what's interesting, Mike? Like my wife and my daughter and I went out to California and we got out there. And our, you know, my father-in-law moved out there. You know, he's old school L-log, landman, and you know, they moved out there part-time and all that stuff. But I was out there, we landed and all that. So first off, I get it. California, I dig California.
Yeah.
It seems like great history, good people, great people. But I did kind of notice, I mean, driving around all that stuff, like I was like, okay. I can see how, you know, if these articles are coming across, you know, my computer screen or my iPhone, I could see how I could say, yeah, you know, I could see us getting to this by 2030 or 2035. This makes sense because there are a lot of EVs out in California, which again, I'm not against.
One in every four new car sales,
which is insane. And I'm seeing this. So I'm looking around, I'm thinking, this is impressive. Like, okay, I like this and all stuff. But then I'm also thinking this, like, that there's a lot of cash in California. It's a very affluent state. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, from what I see, to have the money to, because EVs aren't necessarily cheap. I guess what I'm saying. So to see all that, I could see why it's like, hey, look, the policy we have seems to be going pretty good. Let's keep going forward with this, I guess, jumping into this pool without testing the water or the depth or the temperature of the water. Let's just keep on jumping in. So I can see why that the disconnect is there, because it kind of looks like you could get there, but there are a lot of realities that are still kind of bubbling under the surface, I see.
And you were at the happiest place on earth, and you were in Southern California, where there is a lot of wealth, and there are a lot of people that are buying EVs. But to your second point about Governor Newsom wanting to streamline permitting, I think he realizes that to get to the next level, it's one thing to get one in every four new vehicles in 2023 sold as an electric. Well, if you look at the other side, that means 75% of the vehicles are internal combustion, okay? And that means, like, if you look at it from kind of a coastal perspective where I'm at, you see a lot of trucks, you see a lot of Sprinter vans, you see those 75% that are not electric are big, hulking, massive vehicles because people like to surf, people like to go to the mountains. California is a great place. The climate lets you do whatever you want.
Yep.
24/7, 12 months out of the year. And I think Governor Newsom recognizes what we started this show about, today with, okay, there is $369 billion out there for the IRA, that pot of money. Do I want that pot of money? Yeah. I lead this state. I want to get that money flowing in here. I want those jobs. I want to support the union jobs or prevailing wages. But the Achilles heel of the environmental movement are the environmental activists that hold hostage all development, whether you call it not in my backyard, NIMBY, or just never build anything ever. That component of it is going to totally hamstring this entire effort. And what I mean by that is we will get 25% EVs. We will see progress that we can celebrate from a, you know, from an environmental lens, so to speak. But that is going to further build this coming catastrophe in my mind, where you will not have the power in 2027. You will not have power. We're already short power in the state of California. And ironically, what saved it this year was the epic rainfall we had all year. And now also, our hydroelectric facilities are back in action.
And also, I mean, you look back on kind of, it seems to me, luck of the weather has been a tremendous saving grace to not just California, but also to the EU. You know,
It was warm there in the winter. Yeah.
What?
It was warm in Europe this winter. And in San Diego, we've had 9 straight months of cooler than average temperatures. And that's hard for people to wrap their head around when you see the mainstream media and the center of the country experience heat waves recently. Yeah. But what we know about climate change, not to get into that, but you're going to have extreme weather. You're going to have wetter wets. You're going to have drier dries, whether that's man-made, anthropogenic or not. It's happening. We're seeing fluctuations in the climate. We can't predict the weather 5 days out, let alone next year or the following. So what happened? Now all of a sudden we have hydroelectric back on in California. It's, in my opinion, creating a false sense of security because we will go through another drought. California always goes through droughts.
Right. Because it's natural, because that's just the climate of California.
Yeah. And whether you want to call it climate change or not, whatever you want to call it, that's what happens. And so I think back to all of this, like, this money's flowing. Everybody's talking about it. I follow Chuck and Colin and the BDE show. They do a great job.
Yeah.
Damn near every one of their shows that they're talking about has 2 or 3 climate segments. And I keep saying, come to California, because Texas, I think, has an extremely beneficial seat at this conference table, because you guys can actually get things permitted and done. So now all that money that, okay, California, we're beating our chest that we're leading the climate action. Well, we're not going to get as much of the money. We're not going to get as much of that pie. And so I think there's a tremendous opportunity for states that want to decarbonize or that want to push for these types of projects to get their hands on this capital that's out there and to create jobs. And regardless of if it's a wind project, solar project, battery project, if it's jobs, your people are happy. If there's jobs, people are happy.
Okay. 2 things. First off, I want to say hello to Bob out there. What's going on, Bob? Bob is our listener.
Might be listening.
He's our listener. My neighbor. That listens to watch. Hello,
listener
Bob.
Of the week.
So let me ask you a question. Okay, you're saying 2027, right? Power's going to be an issue, right? Power generation be an issue. Power, whatever's going to be an issue. What do you think that's going to look like? Paint me a picture on kind of
emergency shutdowns. It's going to look like emergency shutdowns. Last September, we all got a text message I'll never forget. I was in my parents' kitchen. We were about to eat dinner and we were, it was this week of heat waves throughout California. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is peak. Here it comes. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, cook the food. The power is going to go out. Well, that didn't happen, because about 10 minutes later, everybody in California received a text message to power down, basically a plea, turn off your microwave, turn off your dryer, stop doing things. And we shed, I want to say it was like 5 to 7 gigawatt response. It was a massive response that saved us from blackout. But that is one day. Ew. That is one day.
Okay, first off,
not a safe way to manage a state.
First off, hats off for the California population coming together and kind of seizing that. Let's pull back and think about that. It's 2022, 2023, okay? And you're getting a text message to shut down your dryer because you're washing your kids' clothes. Or you're a message to shut down the washing machine. But, that sucks. That sucks. Yeah. The fact that, we're dealing with power with a text message and pleading with people, especially with California, with such abundant resources everywhere. It's frustrating. It sucks.
Right.
That's kind of the whole point of kind of this having this podcast.
Right.
These discussions.
Right. Right. And so to kind of close the discussion on that, what will happen is that won't work. it's going to be the boy that cried wolf. Ultimately, people are like, oh man, I got this text message.
Yeah, I ain't doing it.
No, I'm doing it. I'm still going to dry my clothes, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you'll have a grid failure or you'll have planned system shutoffs, however they want to phrase it. They're going to have to shut things down. And or fast forward from September 22 to December 22, when it was rainy all month throughout the state of California.
Yes, and everything was filled.
Powered by
hydro.
Natural gas.
Not hydro?
No, we had no hydro yet because the rain hadn't filled up the reservoirs yet. Even still, the amount of PV that is available is a fraction of what it is in the spring and summer because you've got only 6-7 good hours of daylight. And then you've got a lot of darkness. And then you've got what? It's cold in California. I didn't know it could get cold here. It was unseasonably cold. It was the cold, not the heat that impacted the grid in that case. And we had natural gas coming into the San Francisco City Gate and the San Diego City Gate at $50 an MCF. Okay. That's insane. That's insane. That's how much gas was. And people in December, January, and February absolutely got smoked on their utility bills. You had
okay, so talking about utility bills, okay,
$1,000 bills.
This may be not even, this may correlate, this may not. However, we just had a crew club event up in Oklahoma City, and we're kind of sitting around, actually, and we're all sitting around kind of talking. I overheard someone at the end of the table saying, is anyone else seeing their, and this is in Oklahoma, is anybody else seeing their utility bills kind of through the roof? I got a message saying that this was going to be, and then he's like, you know, then I got, you know, another one saying that it's going to be this much more.
Right.
And I kind of leaned back and I said, man, I just received something that, you know, that, utility bills kind of in this area was expected to be 300% more this coming up. So I'm not sure if it's what's kind of happening or anything like that when it comes to that aspect, but it's trickling across the US. I mean, you're seeing
absolutely
utility bills go up tremendously.
Right, because we're building all this new infrastructure, which we need to do in some cases. Some cases, it's expensive infrastructure that is not that effective, in my opinion. But yeah, if you're talking about building out massive solar parks with massive industrial battery storage parks that only offer you 2 hours of storage, and then it's all tied up in this levelized cost of storage calculation that smoke and mirrors says, oh, well, we charge the batteries on a penny a kilowatt hour during the daytime, and then we discharge them at night, and it smooths out the peak. Well, no, it doesn't, because what happens when it rains all month in December, you're charging your batteries on natural gas, and that is really expensive to do. So things like that, those nuances are not publicized by the mainstream.
The reality.
They don't know how to cover it. They're not smart enough on energy policy to know how to uncover it.
All right. So blackouts happen. Okay. Usually when something like this happens, there's a, first off, there's someone to blame. Okay.
Yeah.
There's
always a finger pointing.
There's always a finger point. So someone's going to blame someone. There's going to be that. There's going to be probably someone to be thrown on the bus, and there's going to be an action, right? Right. There's going to be a blame, a finger point, and a reaction, right?
Yeah.
What's that? First off, who's going to be to blame? And because it's going to happen, whether you like it or not, unfortunately. And I think it's ridiculous how energy is a political sector.
Right.
But I understand how it gotten. Everything's political. KFC versus Chick-fil-A is. But
right.
So who's to blame for this? And what's the solution? I mean,
who's to blame is regulators, policymakers, and operators. Those three. And I'll give you an example since I know it, my state best. Natural gas storage in California. We went into December 2022. If you look at the storage regions across the country, we were the West was the only region with like 30% storage. So we had 70% available pore space to put natural gas in depleted oil reservoirs.
Okay.
Those are our storage facilities in California. We didn't do it. So who's talking to Pacific Gas and Electric? Who's talking to SoCal Gas? Who's talking to SDG&E, although I don't know if they manage any gas storage? Who's talking to the operators managing the storage facilities as to why those facilities were not prepared for a cold winter? I'll tell you, one of the reasons is back to the regulators and the permits. There was an Aliso Canyon blowout a number of years ago, and they haven't even been able to get permits for a period of time to rework the gas storage wells. So now you're saying, well, we've got gas storage. We import 90% of our gas, but you're not allowed to work over. You're not allowed to drill new wells in this field. You're not allowed to maintain these things until we study it. Okay, well, what happened? While you're studying it and you're not permitting anything, the thing was empty, okay? And we all got hosed on our utility prices. So that operators, regulators, policymakers, and my belief, and we've talked about this in the past, is we need, as a nation, we need more independent operators, independent developers of energy projects. I don't want to hear about massive major oil companies and their direct air capture projects on the other side of the equation, your job is to produce barrels of carbon. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And everybody needs to realize a lot of those grifts that are happening need to be come under the microscope and say, what true benefits are you providing to the people? And that's the vacuum that I'm trying to fill with being, you know, out there and outspoken as an independent operator, an independent developer, trying to put a clean power project out there. The system is totally skewed to favor the massive operators, the large renewable developers, the large oil and gas companies.
Did you see that? Did you see that Energy Crew podcast, the other number one energy podcast with Ryan Keyes that I did live about the? And so that's very similar to what you were saying. It doesn't include the super majors. You know, super majors at the end of the day, it's not going to be them that kind of gets the realities pushed through. It's going to be the smaller independents, the medium size. So anyway, we had a discussion on kind of bringing kind of what you're doing out in California with California for Energy and Science. If you want to learn more, head over to
energyandscience.com.
You're getting better at that, by the way.
Yeah.
And he's kind of spearheading this kind of a group working with the NPC to get all these smaller, mid-sized operators and all that stuff. And anyone out there listening that wants to get involved in that, please shoot me a note, find me on LinkedIn, and I'll connect you to Ryan that way to get involved, to go to one of these meetings. But yeah, it's going to be a joint collective, but people working together to kind of portray the energy realities and kind of what's needed to operate.
100%. Yeah, I thought that was a great conversation you and Ryan had. And I think what comes to my mind is we have to start these grassroots movements, because that is exactly what has shut down the fossil fuel industry and the permitting pathways at the federal and state levels in some cases. The environmental activists, they get organized. The environmental activists, they've learned how to funnel big billion-dollar donors and funnel the money in, but they didn't start that way. They started that way as the Center for Biological Diversity out of some guy's backyard in the middle of the desert in Arizona.
Out of some diner.
Hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to figure out how to file lawsuits to slow everything down. And they are a lawsuit filing machine. And so it just takes effort. It takes motivated people. And it takes independents that are not scared to go out there with facts and discuss them respectfully. You know, we don't need to tell the environmental activists, we don't want to talk to you. No, we need to engage. We need to be there. We need to share our energy expertise with them to say, hey, if you're not just total NIMBY, if you're actually a reasonable group, let's talk about how we come together and lower energy prices for the consumer and increase reliability for the people.
But I think that's such a great point you had, Mike, because we're not on opposing teams or opposing viewpoints on this. What's very interesting, many people in a lot of industries, not just the oil and gas industry, are environmentalists. And I'll tell you one thing right now. I've been more environmentalist in the oil and gas space than I have. And I'm not just BSing about that.
Right.
People enjoy Mother Nature. They enjoy sunrises. They enjoy a nice ranch. They enjoy nice scenery. They don't like trash on their... So like, we're on the same kind of pathway. We want to protect the environment. However, we do need energy to survive and to flourish in 2023. I equate it to like everyone, you know, loving roads. They love what roads provide for us. We get to the hospital roads. I take my kids using roads. I go to the grocery store using roads and all stuff. Suddenly, I'm an anti-road person. They ruin the environment. Right. Ruins, you know, snail crossings, whatever like that. I hate roads. Okay, what's
no, I was just gonna say, I think that's the beauty of what we're doing. That's the beauty of what you're doing. You're a great communicator. You're great at bringing people together, and that's the momentum that we're gonna see, whether there's one person watching this live or whether there's 1,000. What it's about is kind of helping people, even if that one person sees something, gets an idea, and says, "Hey, I want to be a part of that." That's what we need to do. We need to start coming together and really just talking about these issues beyond our own groups. And I think that's what you do so well.
Yeah, I call it an echo chamber. I mean, we're in it, and to me, it's like, don't get me wrong, it's great every now and then, but if you know, if you're in your own house jamming out your guitar doing your solos, I mean, who are you really attracted besides, you know, your neighbors? You got to get out of, I don't know what that, you know, right. I'll go with that metaphor. I'll take it. Right. But you have to break out across to the other side of the table to people that may not understand you and you may not understand them, and engage in this healthy dialogue, and something I feel that's been lost by a lot of subjects, not just energy.
Right. And I think you learn a lot. That's how you learn. That's how you grow
and collaborate. You don't think there's opportunities working with the other side of the table or someone that you may think is opposing you, but you just haven't gotten the same room to talk to yet. So let me ask you a question, Mike. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call you Mike because we're that close, first name basis. Yeah. What can people do to kind of get involved, I guess, on the like, for example, the reason what I'm doing, I'm kind of setting you up to plug California for Energy and Science. Yeah. And I want to say this too. California's for Energy and Science is not just for California. I'm involved in it. I signed up. I get the newsletter. I get the meeting notes. I get all that stuff. I think it's fascinating. And Mike, I'm gonna kind of plug it, and then you kind of take it from there.
Yeah.
A couple months back, Mike formed a 501c3, which is kind of the goal is to bring together these smaller independent operators, service companies, people inside and outside the oil and gas space, the energy space, whether it's retail or whatever like that, to provide some sort of realistic environmental studies, studies on social economic matters, people, you know, living below the poverty line, and what energy policy, how it affects them. So the fact that you're covering energy policy from the environmental, from the community, from the ports of California, site, everything like that. And what it is, you just kind of sign up and you attend if you want, you can tune in if you want, or you just kind of read what it, but it's kind of there to provide some sort of education and dialogue about the energy realities. I mean, I love the fact is, Mike, and this is just a kind of quick fact, I'm going to let you take over. One of the things that I love is like, yeah, okay, California says, okay, we can't do XYZ anymore. We can't produce anymore anything in our backyard. That's fine. However, if you look at the, what is it, 600,000 barrels of oil or 60,000 barrels of oil? What is it a year?
600 million a year.
600 million. I knew it was six. We consume. I knew it was six, but I don't listen. Believe me, I don't. Just ask my wife that. So anyway, 600, whatever. We're not getting that here, but we're going to get that elsewhere. Where is that else? What's happening to that else? That elsewhere isn't EPA regulated. That elsewhere is flaring like it's going out of style. And what was that fact with seven times? What was that?
Well, our number one source of oil to California is Iraq. They flare six times the amount of gas that we in 1 year that California produces and consumes in six.
Bro.
That's a lot of gas being flared.
So it's these realities that that you're doing such a good job. And honestly, that's kind of what we're doing here. So anyway, Mike, if you want to take it away, how people kind of get, it's kind of a call. It's not a call to action. It's a call to learn more. So talk about
anybody stuff. Can go to energyandscience.com, click join us. That goes directly to me. You'll get on our email list. I copy a lot of stuff from what you do with your crew events, from what the Digital Wildcatters events are about. Like, I've been getting in touch with you and them and going to these events, scouting. Like, you guys are so good at bringing communities together. So how can we do that in California? That was the purpose. And we started, we've had eight meetings now. It's 8 months
That's
in.
So awesome.
We've got 350 members.
When's your
I've
next
spoken
meeting?
At the next meeting is going to be August 29th in Taft, California, the west side of the San Joaquin Valley.
You couldn't have pushed that a week.
No. You don't. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that later. But so we've you know, I've now had connections with University of California at Berkeley. No short of the, you know, the poster school for environmental activism. That's where I want to go. That's the students that we have coming into our group. We have professors that are working with us on these studies from UC Berkeley. And that's the model that the industry must have. You have to partner with university. You have to partner with youth. You have to do scientific research. And you have to show the facts and let the chips fall where they may. So right now,
And most important thing is, taking all that out, you have to do something. You can't sit on your ass and not do anything.
Doing nothing is not an option. Oh, doing nothing means
that's what I talked about last night. Be proactive. Yes. Now's our chance to be proactive.
Absolutely. Teach people. Why not? If you've got something to share, teach people. And so we just look at the facts, and it's been a very welcome reception from all members of the community in the industry, out of the industry, students. They love it because they want to know. They don't want to hear from the mainstream media about the climate. And I think people are so overwhelmed and inundated with these non-scientific articles that are published daily in across newspapers across the country that are published, no offense, by journalists that don't know what they don't know. And they're taking quotes from people and trying to make it sound like they know what's happening with the energy systems and with the environment. So what we're doing, our first studies, I'll tell you, tease it a little bit. We've got air monitoring devices out in fields to show if there are any emissions coming out of oil and gas wells in California. Now, shocker, there are in Texas because you guys flare. We banned the wasteful flaring of gas in 1937. With that in mind, why are you not producing in California, where you have the California Environmental Quality Act and some of the cleanest oil fields in the world, bar none, and you're making 600 million barrels a day come through the ports instead? Why would we do that? So that's our first study.
So stopping that. So pretty much what you're just saying is there is like, look, if we are consuming the same amount of hydrocarbons that we've consumed previously and all stuff, why don't we produce it in our control, in our backyard, where we can regulate if there's anything flaring, if there's anything this, if there's this, that.
Right.
We can, with our EPA regulations, we can more ethically, responsibly, and environmentally responsibly produce that barrel of oil versus importing it on a dirty diesel tanker from a different country, traveling all wherever it goes, whatever market it goes through Russia and all that stuff. Why don't we do that here?
It's better for the environment. It's better for the economic benefit of our communities. And it's better for the energy systems and availability and reliability and everything. And it's called a cost-benefit analysis. And most people just kind of, whatever, out of sight, out of mind. That NIMBY stuff's got to go. It's got to go.
No more booping.
No more booping.
We're not booping. Anyway, I want to thank everyone there for tuning in. And if you are tuning in live, we appreciate that. We might do this a couple more times, but tune in your comments right now. And if you are tuning in your car right now and you want to hear some of the questions and all this stuff, stick around. But if not, we appreciate
people your cell phone number so they can call in. How's this work now?
No, bro. There's a comment section here. Look, I can show it. Look, see, if you're watching this, I can do this.
Mm.
So
love it.
Yes, just
cool.
Bear with me. Let me close this out. So everyone, I want to thank everyone for tuning in for Energy Fact Checks. If you enjoyed this, please leave a comment. It helps or share, like, subscribe. Help spread the word and get the some energy facts out there, so constructive conversations can happen. And stick around after the great beats get dropped to take some Q&A from Mike, not myself. All right, back to a very special episode of Q&A from the audience. Let's see who tuned in. We have James Dunn-Alstein from OKC, who I did hang out with on Wednesday, and he also went to the Digital Wildcatters Energy Tech Night last night. Howdy from OKC. Great catching up. It was a blast. Man, have you ever met James before, Mike?
I don't think so.
Awesome, dude.
The face might look familiar.
Awesome, dude. Yeah. He's is a geologist, and now he's doing his own thing, but he's also kind of getting in the Hollywood acting realm of things.
Whoa,
so he's
very cool.
I don't know if I can say some stuff, but he's been in some pretty big movies that are coming out.
We need more geologists in Hollywood.
So there was also a discussion in Oklahoma City. My wife and I went to the botanical gardens, and some lady there said that botanists have the most puns. And I said, ma'am, I'm the only gas space. Geologists have a lot of puns too. So yeah. I think it's going to be a pun off between the two. We had a Lord tuning in. Howdy from my latest pit stop, Colorado. I love me. I'll be up in Colorado next week for a crew club event. I love me, Colorado. Alyssa said, great metaphor for California regulations and feels especially
analogous. Nice.
Okay. Got to Google.
What was the metaphor for the the Western Front. Yeah. The Western Front.
I like that.
Yeah.
Appearance of a lot of dinero. All right, Ben. And then we have Craig Tunis says, thanks, JP. No, thank you, Craig.
What's appearance of a lot of money? Who's appearance of a lot of money? Must have been at a point in time in the conversation.
Yeah, it was at a point in time. This isn't a question. Yeah. I think it was kind of a comment on how are we going to fix the California when the power goes out, maybe, or something like that. But anyway, I think this is it. I want to thank everyone.
Oh, appearance. Oh, California. It is an appearance of a lot of money. We do have the highest poverty rate in the country. So
you really?
Yeah. Well, and the most homeless. Yes, it's a very two-tier system. There aren't the middle class is vanishing, sadly. It's very hard to survive in the middle class in California.
It sucks. It's kind of a question of the higher ups pulling the string and everyone else getting screwed.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the point of having this these conversations. But anyway, yeah. We appreciate it, Mike. Always good talking to you. I'm going to end the broadcast. Stick around as it uploads, and everyone. Just kind of have some...